Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are live. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, everybody, to another bonus episode of Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. I'm the Brandon of Carolyn and Brandon. And smiling in my computer screen right now is the Carolyn of Carolyn.
That's right. I'm bringing
great,
it.
The great Carolyn Osorio. Good evening, Carolyn. How are you?
Who we don't deserve, but who shows up anyway.
We really don't deserve her, but yet she shows up for us every week. So,
yes.
And that is a fact.
That is a factamundo. Yes.
How are you?
How was your weekend?
My weekend was rainy.
Mm-hmm.
It rained down here, and I didn't believe it was going to rain, or I thought it was just going to rain a little bit, and I was extending this concrete walkway on the side of my house, and I dug it out and built the forms and laid the gravel, and I'm like, you know
just
what,
the rain. You know, everybody, if you don't already know, that's Brandon showing off, and that's his, like, porn for us all, okay?
Just because it's not showing off.
Okay, all right.
I mix all this cement, you know, like 6 bags in a wheelbarrow, like a couple at a time, and I'm pouring them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the skies open up and it just pours rain for like 3 hours, which isn't good for freshly, you know, poured concrete.
Was this in a wheelbarrow?
A wheelbarrow. Yes. Wheelbarrow.
What did I say?
You said wheelbarrow.
No, I said wheelbarrow.
You did say barrow? Okay, good.
Yes, I did.
All right. Mixing it in a wheelbarrow and then pouring it into the forms. Okay, But then the rain starts, and so rain is putting on, and I'm like, ah, damn it. And it's right, like, kind of near my driveway, and it's all angled, sloping correctly into the plantings. So I gotta make like a little dam to keep the water from going in, and I gotta put a tarp over. It was a nightmare.
What is this with you and irrigation? I feel like we've
it's
had
important.
This
irrigation's very important, Carolyn.
I think it's really important to you. Yeah. Actually, you're right. We're dealing with irrigation problems. Yeah. We did like a French drain, and it was, I should say, the royal we didn't do it. My husband did it, but.
And what was the outcome? Did it not work?
I don't even want to go here. It's just a comedy of errors.
All right, that upsets me. If you have a non-functioning French drain, it upsets me. And I could consult for you if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You just let me know.
I don't think that would be a good idea.
Extensive experience. Okay.
Okay.
But so anyway, I'm going to have to patch up this concrete. I talked to a concrete guy who works for the city. I just pulled him aside. I said, hey,
totally was like, you just were like, hey.
Yeah. I said, hey, listen, that's what I did. I fucked up and I poured it in the rain. I said, what do I do? And he said, you got to just mix up like half a bag and just put a top layer on like it's frosting, and that will, and you could smooth it out and no one will know the difference. I went, it's a good idea. Thank you.
You know what? I love it when that happens, when people just give you their knowledge, you know, and it's not like a weird thing. You're just like, hey, you know, I'd love that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I do that. Not as often as I ask, am I asked, but I had a great, so I have a mentor that I work with, and it's my Friday end of week call. Every last call of every Friday is with this guy. It's like a little kind of vacation for me because he's so great, and I've learned so much from him. But he actually used our last week's hour long call to ask for my advice, and it was great. And I got so nervous, like I didn't want to fuck it up. I got so nervous, and I was like making notes as he was like laying out the situation for me, you know, of what was troubling him, and it was awesome. It was
when the student becomes the master.
Yeah, it was super cool. Mm-hmm. And it really made me think about where I take my cues from in my life, and it all came back to literature, right? It just came back to books, you know? And so that was really cool. He was just having a problem with someone, and he had an expectation that wasn't met. And he understands the expectation is what leads to, you know, unease or disappointment. He said, but the actions from this guy came out of left field, you know, and he's on the rise, and he's starting a new company, and he's got all the blah, blah, blah. And so yeah, it was great. It was a nice moment for me. So it was cool.
Well, I'm happy that you had that. That's such a wonderful gift. Mm. Like, he didn't even realize he was giving it to you.
And he didn't.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
And I got all like, it was just like natural. You know, I was like, hey, let me ask you something. I need your advice. I went, oh shit. And I straightened up, you know, and I put my glasses on so I look smarter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is that what they're for? A prop?
That's a complete prop. Yeah, the only a prop. So that was great.
I mean, it's great to know that this big mentor of yours still struggles with expectation, because that's like one of the hardest lessons that, you know, I think I've ever learned. You know what I mean? Like, and actually my mother-in-law was the one who really taught me that, you know, like not to have expectations. When you give something, you give it freely and you don't expect something in return. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the no strings attached, because, you know, that's really hard to do. You know, whether you're making something for someone and you give it to them, or you're giving them money and you give it to them. Like, if you give something to someone, you just completely give it to them. You know what I mean?
Sure. What he was talking about was a little different. It was a reasonable, because there's unreasonable expectation, there's reasonable expectation. A reasonable expectation is when someone, at least in my opinion, or in this case, behaved in a certain way for 15 years of a relationship. Okay.
Yeah.
Had a certain type of character that could be counted on, that, you know, showed up for him and that was there and could be counted on. And then this person's situation changed for the better for them in terms of business. Okay. Mm-hmm. And was completely unexpected that the character change would happen, that he basically became an asshole. Okay.
Yeah.
It was like, you read about Hemingway, where when he was a struggling artist, like, everybody loved him. He was a drinking buddy and the fishing buddy, and he'd wrestle with you, and he was the greatest guy to have around. As soon as he got famous, he became a douchebag and everybody fucking hated him. Okay. Mm-hmm. What Marcus Aurelius called getting dyed purple. Okay, because purple was the color of royalty, because it was the most difficult dye to procure. It was most expensive, right? So it was reserved for the royal robes, okay? So getting dyed purple, like, or he called it becoming Caesarified, right? Becoming like Caesar and being affected by the trappings of wealth and power that you don't expect it, you know? And Marcus Aurelius made sure that he checked himself all the time, that he didn't get dyed purple. And so when that happens to somebody, and I would see it happen all the time when I was working at the hotel, because we would only promote from within, right? Like, if there was a managerial or a supervisor opening, I would promote one of my valets, right? Who was like good with the guests and a good leader and good with the valets. And it was only about half the time I made a terrible decision. Half the time it was right. And I could never tell, it was a coin flip, right? But you give a kid some power and he'll be humbled by it and he'll work harder. You give a different kid the power and he just turns into a dickhead and everybody hates him and he starts ordering people around and wanting shit and everything. And I'm like, I didn't see that coming, you know? Mm-hmm. So you never know how it's going to affect people. And
you really don't.
Yeah.
And how their success or their is going to affect you.
Sure.
You know, because I do think that people, you know, if you have success, people do treat you differently too. And you kind of get insecure about it. And then that weirdness kind of comes out. It's like the human behavior is just so whacked out. Like,
unexpected. It's really unpredictable. Unpredictable.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think you never know. You don't know how parenthood is going to affect you, what kind of parent you're going to be. My older brother was the craziest guy that you'd ever meet, took the dumbest risks always looking for fun and craziness and just a lunatic, an absolute lunatic.
Yeah.
The moment that his daughter was born, he became the most fucking annoying helicopter parent.
Oh my God. He wouldn't
let anyone near his daughter. He became a germaphobic. Like, and I'm going, what the hell happened to you? He goes, I don't know. I can't help it. I'm just nervous about everything. Because I think about the life that I lived up to now, and I can't imagine my daughter making even one-tenth of the bad decisions that I've made, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I would never have expected that of him. But it's you never know. You're right. Human behavior, it's a crapshoot. You don't know how people are going to respond to situations, you know?
But, I mean, I have to tell you, I do love it. I mean, I'm saying that. But I love, like, analyzing, you know, people in weird situations, yeah, especially when it's so unexpected and you expect someone to go this way and then they do this.
And they go the other way. You know, sometimes it's heartbreaking, right? Sometimes it hurts you. Sometimes it doesn't, you know, like I don't know. I mean, you know, I go back to, I remember when I was a kid, the first time, not really the first time, but when my dad's best friend's dad died young and unexpectedly. Okay. So my parents had us young. So, you know, I was like 10 when my dad was, you know, in his early 30s, right? So his best friend's dad died. And they lived up in Boston. We were in Jersey. And, you know, my dad was a pilot and he just dropped everything and called in sick and drove up there and spent like 3 days with his best friend and his friend's brothers and a couple other fraternity guys. You know, helping out and taking care of things and doing stuff. And that summer we were all together and his dad's best friend, Bill, we were sitting down on the beach and he said, I got to tell you, your dad's a good guy. You know, he dropped everything and he came up here. I said, well, he's your best friend. And he goes, no, that's not friendship. He goes, that's not even really loyalty. He said, that's character. Okay. And so, you know, he said, and it's a cliche, but it was the first time that I had heard it from him when he said that hard times don't build character. They reveal character. Okay. And that always has stayed with me.
That's so cool that you remember that when you're 10 years old.
Totally
that's
remember. So... Because I was having an adult conversation with a grown-up, with a guy that I looked up to, who was talking to me like I was his equal, you know, which was
didn't happen. And that's, you know, my thing about, like, I've never spoken, and I don't mean this in a weird way, but I've never spoken down to my kids. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like, have an intellectual conversation as if they, you know, they're going to get it. Like your friend, like it's never too early to do that because they do get it, you know?
Yep.
And, I love that. I love it that you remembered that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I've even used that in dialogue. I've given that dialogue to characters in stories that I've written about, you know, it being about character. Yeah.
Well, because it's so true.
Yep.
It's so true.
It is.
Again, going back to what you were talking about, what we were beginning of the conversation, it's like, you don't know what you're going to do. I always hope that in situations where I'm called upon to be courageous, to have grit, to show up, that I can do it. But we don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yep. We don't know. Yep. So speaking of,
not knowing what you would do.
Lack of character. Let's get into murder for hire.
Oh my gosh, everybody, Brandon's eyes are twinkling. He's like sheepish and excited about this.
This was a fun episode. This was fun. There were a lot of layers to it. I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know really who the bad guys were going to be. But the bad guys were really bad. And
the bad guys were really bad.
Yeah, and the good guy was didn't deserve what he got. But yeah, so I appreciated your opening, right? Like tense, the murder from, you know, a point of view of the neighbor who didn't really know what was going on. So that was cool. So we were kind of in the dark also. But you know, you hit on a point a couple of times that the guy lived there for 30 years. He understands the rhythm of the neighborhood. That's a really astute kind of observation because that's very true. You know, you can just kind of tell when something's out of place. You know,
I can tell when my door, like when the kids and I are all running out the door, and I could just tell when they haven't shut it all the way. Sure. There's the sound that it makes when it's like the door's not shut and they look at me like,
yeah, I can be at the opposite end of my house and feel like a draft on my ankle and know which window's open, you know? Right? I know. It pisses my wife off. She goes, there's no fucking way that it's the left window in the laundry room. I'm like, I guarantee it. I guarantee it.
No, I'm the same way.
Yeah. And then an extension of that is what the guy did next. Was that he's sitting in the driveway too long with the car running in his garage. He said, it's too long. I think there's something wrong, you know? And exactly. Good for him for checking it out. Yeah. No,
because then having that feeling of like, you know what? I shouldn't be doing this. I know he's going to think I'm being a weirdo, but I have to do it. You know what I mean? Like you go through that whole thing. Yeah. You can tell he's not like some, you know, nosy neighbor.
It speaks to a larger kind of condition or a larger just risk that we shouldn't be afraid of making fools out of ourselves.
Yeah.
Like professionally, creatively, especially being willing to fail, being willing to be wrong, being willing to be embarrassed for a second, right? Mm. Because you never know, you know, you never know. So that's a good lesson. It's a good lesson. You could save someone's life.
I agree.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, it's like, if he wouldn't have been so perceptive and so like, checking stuff out and like in a split second was like, oh yeah, that's a Prius. Like, I mean,
right.
They probably would not have put these pieces together at all.
This guy, this fucking, different. This neighbor, he's got his shit together. He really has his shit together. Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yeah, yes, he totally does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now we're off to the races. Now we have a murder. And so the cops obviously have to do their jobs and try and figure some shit out. And so they start digging, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do they find?
But what did you think of Wendy's interview, the ex-wife? When you heard her, what did you think?
I honestly wanted to think it was crocodile tears, but it's, I bought it. I believed her. Mm-hmm. I could, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just sometimes she was either really, really good. But I believed her. What did you think?
The first time I saw it, I really believed it too. I wanted to believe it too.
Because she was saying weird shit that didn't make sense. Like she goes, I have a lot of friends. And the guy's like, you have friends that would do this? Like, what are you talking? Why would you say, you know, like she was speaking it. Like mm-hmm. you can tell that she was confused and she was saying some shit that if she had an alibi or a story in her head that she wouldn't have said. Like, that's not something that you would plan on saying to prove your innocence, you know?
Well, I think that she appeared to be vulnerable
mm-hmm.
and she appeared to be like relatable because that isn't that how you would be? You'd be scattered, you'd be crying, right. But then once you, I think, get over that and you go back, and especially now that I know more about the case, it's like, oh, well, she's throwing everybody under the bus, right? Right. Her ex-boyfriend, her brother, her, you know, just like anybody that she can think of, you know, people on the internet, yeah. like, you know, so I look at it completely differently now, but, right. But when I first saw it and I didn't really know anything about the case, I wanted to believe her.
Yep. So they had two boys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They were married for about what, like 13 years or something like that?
No, they were married for like, I think a total of 7 years.
7 years.
So not,
okay.
not,
oh,
not
a... divorced in 2013. That's why the number 13 was in my brain.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so two boys.
Yeah.
And she was from a wealthy family.
Yes. I think they both were.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I'm worried about her a little bit with her. She had an older brother. The older brother's the dentist, right?
So she had two brothers. The older brother went to, he became a doctor and he became kind of like the black sheep in the family because the mom didn't like the choice that he'd made for a partner. And so he was kind of like, you know, excommunicated from the family.
Right.
So then her next older brother, so the middle child was Charlie. He was 2 years older than her and they were really close growing up. And she would describe him as being, you know, her protector And, you know, when you're 2 years apart, you know, with kids, like, that's really close. You know, they can.
No, it's very close.
That's a playmate. Yep, you know, absolutely. It seems like he was really protective of her, and she had the type of personality where it's like she saw herself as needing protection. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. So the cops start digging around.
Yeah.
What's the first actionable, like, lead that they get?
The first one was the Prius. That was the only thing they had. That was it. They had nothing else.
All right, but wait, let's back up a little bit. Back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's come up, like, what would a motive be from within the family? Okay, so they were divorced. He got custody of the boys.
It was shared custody, but she was really smart. When she went in there, she laid it all out. You know, we do these shows and they don't want to admit cop that they're having an affair. They don't want to, like, we actually just did an episode and you said you believed the person because he said that he admitted he had an affair. You're like, I believed him. He came in there and he said, oh, the Tylenol. Yeah. And you were like, yeah, I believe that he was. I thought you were going to totally go into the rabbit hole with him. And you're like, no, I totally believe that he didn't have anything to do with it because he said that he had an affair. And I feel like she went in there and she just laid it out. You know, we had this contentious divorce, you know, they had joint custody. She wanted to, you know, if she was with a deadbeat guy, the dad would have been like, okay, fine, move 7 hours away. But no, he really wanted to be a huge part of his son's life. And right. So she was stuck in Tallahassee, you know?
And she had stopped working at the college by then, and only
She was still a university professor, but she just did not like it there. She wanted to be close to her family. You know, I guess, you know, South Florida's, you know, faster pace and not so laid back as, you know, Tallahassee, just different vibe. And, you know, he was having a great time. You know, he was this, you know, successful professor. He's like touring, you know, going to conferences,
seeing his kids.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty much, I mean, so I think
she wanted to get out.
Yeah.
She couldn't because of those pesky, you know, pesky family laws that you share custody. So,
so tough. I mean, I'm glad I haven't had to go through that. That would be really, 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 really tough.
Oh man. I had a couple of friends who have gone through it and it just tears them apart.
Mm-hmm.
Tears them apart. It's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So that was the situation. Contentious divorce. She doesn't want to be there. He's not going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is a faction within her family that wants her and the boys in South Florida.
Yes.
Period. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So now we have this, you know, superhero neighbor with Sherlock Holmes level observation skills.
Okay? Absolutely. Yeah.
And power and deductive reasoning powers that. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
That wind was blowing on his lower calf.
Right. There you go. It was, aha! A Prius. Because it sounded different. It wasn't the normal sound of an internal combustion engine.
The hum of the engine.
The hum of the engine. And the color, the way the sun reflects. Anyway. he knows it's a silver Prius. He tells the cops.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the cops are able to use that one thing. And this is where it got really fun. This is the fun and games part of the episode where they start tracking it down, where they use, you know, they have security camera. They have cameras from different buses and intersections where they're able to figure out that this Prius was stalking this guy.
Absolutely.
Was following him like all day, but they couldn't see who was driving and they couldn't get license plates.
Yes.
But they were able to figure out, I forget how, that it was a rented car.
A sticker.
The toll sticker.
The
toll sticker.
We
just rented a car in South Florida, and that's totally true. They upsell you. They upsell you at the fucking place, and they go, hey, there's tolls everywhere, okay? Mm. And you can't pay them. You have to have this fast pass, or it's a ticket, and you get it in the mail, and then you have to pay them. I'm like, why don't you tell us? Okay, anyway. So we got the, yeah. So you get,
you know what's so funny is like, that's the perfect sales technique of like giving way too much information and you're just like, just give it. You know what I mean? Like that. Just do it. I don't want to hear the story. I don't want to hear the story.
Right, 'cause I want to get out of this office and get to my hotel. So yes.
Yeah.
Yes to everything. Okay. Great.
Exactly. Yes.
So they trace the car to a South Florida, which is important, a South Florida rental company.
A Miami company. Yep.
And these idiots left their cell phones on the whole time. Yeah. So they're getting pinged the whole way to Tallahassee. They know when they stop to take a leak. They know when they stop to get McDonald's. They know everything. These idiots.
They do. Okay? Yes.
Right up to the house.
Mm-hmm. And what was perfect about it too is that, you know, a good defense attorney could be like, "Hey, you know, you don't know that they were together. Like they ping." But then when they got the money shot of them at the ATM, and they're both in the frame.
Yeah. No. Look. No. It's still all circumstantial. First of all, they're all circumstantial. Yes. Okay. Yep. But then they get the guys' names from the rental company.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys is the ex-boyfriend of the current girlfriend of the dentist brother.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yep. Yep.
So now things are starting to fall into place a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, and then this is also another wonderfully funny and not funny way, but excellent run of writing where you find out, the cops find out that this Wendy, right? That's her name?
Wendy Adelson.
The girlfriend.
No, Katie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Her name's Katie.
Katie.
Yes.
With a weird last name, right? The girlfriend is driving a new luxury car, used, but new to her.
Mm-hmm.
She got a new boob job.
Yep.
And she's on the payroll at the dentist's office where she doesn't work.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Like, I don't know how they don't think this is going to track back to them.
Right?
I don't get that.
How could they think? Okay. How could they think that?
Okay.
And then the other thing that came brilliantly into focus was just the fucking mess of a midlife crisis that this dentist was in. Okay. Okay. Just a,
what? I can't even like think about this as a midlife crisis I can relate to. I just cannot relate to this at all. Like, I'm going to flex by acting like I have all these, you know, friends and, you know, I can get a hitman if I want to. Like, I just don't, if I was at a party and some middle-aged guy was talking to me, dropping this stuff, I would just be like, "Hey, I'll be right back." You know what I mean? Like, I can't.
Yeah. But but that's the thing. Like, so that's the world that he wanted to live in because he needed that excitement, I guess, in his life. He must have been like super stoked that he was dating a girl who, A, he felt comfortable asking with the reasonable expectation that she would answer in the affirmative. "Do you know anyone who would kill a guy for money?" She's like, "Oh, honey, I'm so happy you thought of me. Wow."
Do you think that there was that kind of, I'm not going to say a sexual tension between the two of them with this, but the way that you said that, it's like, was that like the exciting thing of like, yeah, we're really in this together? And like, I don't think
they were in this together. I think it was just, he felt like connected, right? He felt like, yeah, I know people. I have muscle. I could pay someone off to kill somebody. Like, that's power.
It's hard for me to understand that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get that. I don't get that at all. Like, I'm trying to understand, like, maybe did it get frenzied where like they're talking about Dan and I hate him. And then she's like, you know, I mean, how does that work? How does it get to that place?
It's a thing. People are want to appear to be powerful. Again, when I was working at the hotel, there was one time, this guy came in. He was probably in his 60s and he had two writers. In Hollywood, you can tell when someone's a writer in a second. And he had two writers with him, okay, that were obviously like interviewing him for something, I guess. I'm not sure. But he comes out like 2 hours later and I was running the valet and they each had their own car. And so the parking was like $15 total, whatever. And the guy's like, No. We don't pay. I'm like, yeah, sure you do. Yeah, everybody pays. What are you talking about? And he was like, no, you know, friends of mine will take care of it, right? And that's language for mafia, okay? Like, he was trying to front with these kids that he was connected, okay? And there had been legit mafia people that had come into the hotel before. And the last thing that they do is not want to pay for something and make like a spectacle or whatever. If anything, they overpay on the way in, okay? And like that's how they roll, because they don't want to get some kind of beef with some dumbass valet like me, right? Who would like make a stink about them not paying. So I call the guy out on it. I just say it up front. I tell the writers, I'm like, if this guy's telling you that he's connected to the mafia, he's full of shit, because there isn't a mafia guy in the world who would nickel and dime someone over a $15 parking charge to impress two writers.
You said it in front of the guy.
In front of the guy. Okay. And I'm like, he's full of shit. There's no way in hell that any connected guy would deal with a douchebag like this.
Did the 60-year-old just melt right there?
He got so embarrassed because he just didn't have the money. I said, if you don't have the money and you're embarrassed about it, just tell me. And I'm a cool guy, and I'll let you go, and you can come back.
Wait a second. You say this in front of the two guys he's trying to.
Of course. I wanted them to know who they were dealing with. Okay.
Oh, Brandon.
And like a week later, it's a writing team. These two kids come back and they go, holy shit, this guy was the biggest fucking con man. He conned our agents. He conned everyone at the network. He conned everybody. And he's some like jack off from like Texas who knows nothing about anything. So what I'm saying is that
I just think
there are people who get so drunk on the idea of power. And listen, knowing someone who for not a lot of money would go and kill somebody, right? That power can be intoxicating, as evidenced with this guy, because he fucking did it.
But here's the bump. Here's the rub. Yeah. Is that the guy you just described, the Texas like mm-hmm. guy, 60 years old, not having a lot of money, like
yeah.
I get that. He's trying to look like a big shot, right?
Yeah.
That's all
yeah.
he's got, right? Yeah. Two dumb young writers who don't know any different, right?
Yeah.
But you've got a successful dentist with this practice, multi-million dollar practice.
Yep.
He drives yep. a Ferrari.
Yep.
You know, he has so much to lose. You know, it just is, I think that's what makes this almost like unbelievable. What? You got your finger up. What?
Sister. He wanted to protect his sister. He wanted to make his sister's life better. That's something that he's done his whole life. He was probably, you know,
that's it right there.
But it's still power. He wanted to flex. He wanted to flex for his sister. Don't worry, little sis. I'm going to take care of this for you.
Yeah.
You are completely
I think that's
clean.
What this is about, not about the mafia stuff.
No, it wasn't mafia. Those are separate. But what I'm saying is like,
No. Yes. But I think that for me, emotionally, I can see that path and him doing this for his sister, not to flex and be the big guy because he's having a midlife crisis.
But it's still a power trip, right?
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But I can relate. I still think it's horribly wrong, and I'm not trying to justify it in any way. But I just the other thing I just can't. I just couldn't like. Why would he do this? This doesn't make sense. This doesn't track. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. So the sister, absolutely. Because when she was testifying at his trial, he was just looking at her with these puppy dog eyes. I'm like, how can you look at her like that, knowing what's about ready to happen to you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So now we realize that there was a larger, more powerful force pulling his strings also, which was his mom.
Yes. Definitely mommy issues.
The matriarch probably said, get those grandkids to South Florida. Do what you have to do. And he was like, Ma, we might have to kill him. Right? She was like, hey, do what you got to do.
I wish I would have just taken a picture of you right there. I can't. You were just like,
what? They get a little.
You were just like,
dirty?
Yeah. I think a little bit more than a little. Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh. Okay, there he is.
Hey, you know.
I think that the mom was, it's, and I don't want to jump ahead, but when you get to that, I don't know how you were affected when you heard the audio of the mom talking, and it was really tough to listen to because of the quality of it. But when she was like, I love my daughter, my one son I don't talk to, the other son's, you know, in jail, and I'm never going to talk to him again. And then my daughter, who I love so much, is, I mean, it was just so primal and so like, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. You know when I knew grandma was wrong on this was when that FBI sting, you know, folded piece of paper. Hey, we need some money and we need this and this and this. And she talks to her son in code. Okay. Duh.
Yeah.
Like that thing. Hey, you remember that guy with the thing we took care of with the other thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other guy, not, you know, it's, come on.
Because you know that these were the type of people, like if this actually happened and they were innocent, they would be running to the police and just being like,
I'm being extorted and I don't know what's going on.
You need to do something immediately.
Yeah.
You know, like immediately. Yeah.
And so then the whole house of cards just started falling down and people start getting arrested and people then get indicted and then they go on trial and people are making deals and people aren't making deals. And so the two trigger men went down, right?
Well, the Louise.
One made a deal.
He made the deal.
Right.
And here's the thing that Katie Bogwanam, I'm sorry, her last name's tough. She was offered full immunity if she testified.
And told him to fuck off. So one guy got 19 years. The other guy got life without parole, right?
Right.
Okay. Right. And then but Katie goes on trial and there's a mistrial at first.
There's a mistrial, right? Like 10 to 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they retry her.
They retry her.
She goes down
big time. Life without the possibility of parole, has young children.
Yep.
Like both of the parents, because Sigfredo was her partner, her ex-partner.
Yep.
He's gone. She's gone. They've got little kids and they're both. I mean, just imagine how.
Yeah, you don't get to arrange a murder. Sorry.
Yeah. That happened. I'm not feeling sorry for her. I'm just saying, like, when she's sitting in her cell at night and she's probably thinking, why did I not take the deal? I mean, we all have regrets, but wouldn't that be just like, wouldn't you just want to just jump off a bridge? I mean.
Well, because she would have had to testify against the man that, I guess, the man she loved, right?
The father of her children. No, just I think at that point she was like saw Charlie for what he was. I think it was more she was protecting the father of her children.
She didn't want to testify against Sigfredo?
No.
Wow.
And I'm sure they probably wanted her to, you know, incriminate Charlie as well and possibly the mother, you know. And that's the thing. When you gamble, you know, she probably thought that she was going to get away with it. I mean, she was like throwing the dice.
So, all right. So Sigfredo, the partner, Katie, they all go away. The guy, the dentist, goes away.
It's just hard to imagine.
He eventually gets convicted, correct? So I was saying that the dentist goes away, Katie goes away, the two trigger men go away, and then eventually the last person to get arrested for this was the matriarch, who was probably behind the whole thing all along. So it looked like Carolyn had an internet outage of some sort up there in the Emerald City. So I'm going to be landing this plane on my own. I wanted to thank everybody for joining us for this bonus episode of Criminal Mischief, covering the case of murder for hire. If you enjoyed the episode, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show. Maybe consider sharing with your friends. And also, while you're at it, please consider supporting the great companies that support our show, because without them, we wouldn't have a show. Until next week, everybody, stay safe out there, and thank you again for listening.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie in the sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself. Music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.